We're tabling the 2023 budget in a difficult domestic and global economic environment. The global recovery is slowing. Domestic load shedding has become more persistent and prolonged, impacting on service delivery and threatening the survival of many businesses. This is compounded by the disruption to freight and logistic networks. Households are under pressure from rising cost of living, and unemployment remains stubbornly high. We are navigating this difficult environment with policies that support faster growth and address fiscal risk. Our pursuit of higher growth remains anchored on three pillars. Firstly, we are ensuring a stable macroeconomic environment to create conducive environment for savings, investment, and growth. Secondly, we are implementing growth-enhancing reforms in key sectors, particularly in energy and transport. And thirdly, we are strengthening the capacity of the state to deliver quality public services, invest in infrastructure, and fight crime and corruption. In this budget, we are allocating additional resources towards these endeavors without compromising the sustainability of public finances.
Welcome to another edition of Eusebius on Times Live. It is the morning after the budget speech had been tabled by the Minister of Finance, Enoch Rongwana. And of course, the question is, what does it all mean? How do you make sense of the numbers? Numbers can terrify those of us who do not like numbers. And the question is, what material difference will it make to your life? What was said yesterday by the Minister of Finance. And I've invited three excellent South Africans to help me puzzle through these questions.
You're listening to Eusebius on Times Live. That's this latest podcast on Times Live. And it's me, Eusebius McKaiser, exploring the major issues of the week. That means you're going to hear a lot of law, politics and ethics, how they intersect and how important these stories are in the life of all South Africans.
When people sold,
their children must know these are sellouts.
They put saliva on the paper.
Mr. Julius Malema whispered and said, sing it, sing it.
And then they shared that Zola.
No, I'm not going to apologize.
Can I have my iPad, please? So they stole it.
First, I want to welcome, I think the first time on the podcast, Nwabisa Kunga, who is the editor of Excellent Sowetan under her leadership. Nwabisa, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Eusebius, and hi.
Then someone who's no stranger to the platform is Sam Mkokeli, who wears many different hats. I was thinking about it earlier, Sam. You know, you've made it in life, and there are many ways of knowing when someone has made it in life, like if they have a foundation in their name, you know, like the Siya Kolisi Foundation. The other is if you have advisory services in your surname, like Sam actually has. And that's one hat that he wears, but he's also our colleague in the Arena Holdings stable, where he writes for us on the political economy in particular, and also is a regular in terms of our audio journalism offering. We're going to have Sam joining us in a second. I think he's just dropped off. And then Oxfam South Africa is being led by someone who's an excellent social justice activist and who has got lots of experience thinking through questions of governance through the prism of social justice, and that is Lebogang Ramafoko. Lebo, thank you so much for being part of this conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Eusebius.
Nwabisa, I'm going to start with you firstly, while we wait for Sam to come on, but we can get the conversation cracking anyway. You know, I was trying to think for myself, both as a journalist and as a South African, what would be the top line narrative around the budget yesterday? There are so many competing, obvious interests that the minister has to try and juggle. or square the circle, as the case might be, from making sure the debt doesn't balloon even further, the public debt. At the same time, conditions are unable for economic growth, so we can get out of this rut of growing at less than 3% per annum. And yet at the same time, we also have massive levels of poverty and unemployment, which means that you can't not spend on social security. And it just seems like none of that add up quite neatly to cake that you can have and eat. And I wonder how you read what he was able to achieve yesterday. We'll get into the minutiae, but just in terms of a top line messaging, stepping back from the detail.
I must say there's a part of me that actually felt sorry for him, as he finished delivering the budget, because I thought, what do you do? So on the one hand, I think you're absolutely right. So he had to, really balance, an immediate relief, the need for an immediate relief. I mean, all South Africans are really pressed from all sides at this stage. And I think, there was an attempt, on the minister's side to say, okay, let's try and kind of give you, some rents and cents back into your pocket. Mm. But at the same time, it was quite clear that, this was not a budget about getting South Africa structurally out of trouble. It was really saying, okay, let's just kind of, put the bandage, I suppose, on your wound at this point, and then we'll pretty much figure out, what to do about, the big picture stuff. So how do we structurally change things? How do we get out of the debt that we're in? And all of that. And it was really that balance. And I think you're absolutely right when you say it doesn't really neatly come together. But it was, it is what we've got, I suppose.
Lebo, you've got a far more muscular take. I mean, Nwabisa and I think, judging from our opening remarks, we're not letting the minister off the hook, but we're both articulating the difficult mathematical equation that he had to solve for. I woke up to your timeline, and you basically said that this was a pro-middle class and a pro-rich budget? Why do you say that?
Yes, Eusebius, that's my feeling. And in my entire career, and maybe I have been in denial, I've never become as jaded as a social justice activist as I am right now. Now, this budget is not presented in a vacuum. It's presented post-COVID. It's presented where people really are going to bed hungry. It's presented where for an informal trader, for an unemployed young person, for a single mother trying to put food on the table, the energy crisis has crippled them. Whatever glimmer of hope that they have had is not there. We've said nothing about it in the speech. Social spending is going to rise by inflation. And I'm saying already when you have so much inequality and poverty, what are you saying? The telltale signs that it is pro-rich and it is pro-middle class. And I'm sure the rich and the middle class will applaud him. It's around the incentives around solar. Now, who are those going to benefit at this point in time? And I think this is where you kill activism. And it has happened in other African countries where we are not talking about load shedding in those countries because the rich will buy a generator, the rich will put on solar, and it is actually the poor that basically bear the brunt of mismanagement. And to be giving more money to Eskom, when on the same day, yesterday was almost, as I said on my post, like an orgy that we were invited as citizens to watch that the ruling party was having. At the same time when allegations, true or not, are made by the CEO around the problems at Eskom, even if they are not entirely true, anybody with sense will tell you that we are where we are, where a state and a ruling party that came into power and said, we are a developmental state, have taken whatever little money there is and squandered it. And all they have is billions to go to Eskom and then rebates for the rich and middle class for their solar. Come on. What does it say to me when I'm in Diepsloot? What does it say to me? Where must I go? Perhaps the poor must eat the rich.
Wow, those are some very strong words. Mabisa, I'm going to come back to what I think is really excellent and useful interpretation from Lebogang through the prism of social justice, right? I mean, I think that's really interesting. But I want to come back firstly to some of the numbers in terms of line items, quite literally on the budget. And then I'm going to then circle back to some of what Lebo has just said so we can debate a little bit of that. I mean, if I look at, for example, the details of Eskom, you know, the government's proposing a total debt relief arrangement for Eskom of some 254 billion rands. Now, that's a lot of money. And of course, it in part speaks to what Lebo was talking about. That's a huge, huge bailout. And that's, you know, an incredible amount. Some of it will be just taking on some of the debt directly, and some of it will be a portion of that is going to be 184 billion rands, which is a full debt settlement that will come in various tranches. And of course, the takeover of around 70 billion rand, if I remember correctly, of the loan portfolio for 25 and 26. And then there are other allocations similar to that in structure that has to do with state-owned entities. You know, also the SAA debacle that is an ongoing one is a fledgling airline, where they will get a billion rand that they're unhappy with, and the consortium thinking that's not enough. When you look at those kinds of expenses and what it is government is taking on board in terms of where it's allocating money, what do you make of that? Do you think those are necessary expenditure items in the budgets? And that what Lebogang is saying, although you don't have to critique it directly for the moment, is a little bit of a case of the government is caught between a rock and a hard place. If it doesn't take on board some of their debt when it comes to state-owned entities, it's going to be accused of allowing key state-owned entities to simply continue to rot and fester. On the other hand, you spend that money and you're also accused of simply bailing out a failing entity.
No, absolutely. So, I mean, for me, a couple of things. The SAA, I mean, I'll be quite frank. I don't understand, why, that, amount was essentially given. It just from a priority, you know, point of view, it just does not make sense, particularly if you look at really the kind of competing priorities that we have at the country with, which, Lebo has alluded to. So that's the one thing. Eskom, it is patently clear that, you know, as I was indicating earlier, that the government is really looking at how do we put some sort of kind of intervention, short-term intervention now. I mean, the narrative is really that, well, we're giving this money to, you know, to, for, you know, to, for Eskom debt in order to help its balance sheet and to hopefully assist it, you know, to do kind of its everyday, day-to-day, stuff. And I think, you know, it's not, as I was indicating, it's not necessarily a structural intervention. Yeah. I think that is really kind of like dead in the water, is, you know, but it's giving money to a problem to say, try and see what you can kind of do and take us from one moment to the next. We'll figure out essentially what's to happen, you know, going forward. And of course, there are certain, you know, the minister says, well, there are conditions. So, for example, if you talk about municipal debt, and Treasury is saying, well, people need to actually move in, you know, to prepaid in order for Eskom not to incur so much debt and all of that. And I mean, that's a whole debate on it, you know, on its own. However, there are competing interests, and there is not, we don't have, you know, this massive pot of gold. And I think perhaps, you know, I do agree with Lebo as far as in those competing interests, I think government then looks and sees, well, you know, who do we think we need to be able to benefit and, you know, and kind of as a priority populace, if you want. And I think those are the choices that they've made. What will happen thereafter, you know, is, well, I suppose we'll have to see.
Sam, let's see whether we've got you on the line. So I want you to react to what Lebo has said, right? Let's put the detail aside and drop it in as you need it in order to construct your argument. Fundamentally, Lebo says she listens to the budget yesterday And it's a pro-middle-class, pro-rich budget, including the tax incentives. And very little is added by way of relief for those on the margins of the economy, people who are unemployed or the working poor, and that the nominal increases, even in certain categories of various grants, do not amount to much in terms of really shifting the needle when it comes to uplifting folks out of conditions on the extremes when it comes to the structural inequity in society. Would you characterize the budget that you heard yesterday as fundamentally anti-poor and pro-middle class and pro-rich?
No, not in context. I wouldn't categorize it in such a way at all. I mean, there isn't much that has been given to the middle class. The middle class has been struggling with everything going up and state failure. The middle class pays for policing, pays for private health, private school, very soon for fixing of roads. So the middle class doesn't get a thing then. The same way as the poorer classes, there isn't much. It's a difficult situation. I agree with the concept of a rock and a hard place. It's a very difficult one. It's a tough balancing act, to use the very tired cliche that comes around every budget at time. We have a growth problem, and therefore we're not getting enough revenue to do amazing things. At the same time, we have a massive hole with the SOEs. You see Eskom getting some money and not Transnet. So the failure to support Transnet is a failure to support the economy. You see mining companies, your Exxaros and your Rio Tintos, they are literally printing money because things are good with the mining boom, but they are not moving enough of their produce to the harbor, Durban, the logistics rail and freight. There's a massive problem there that are actually frustrating our potential growth. So there's a failure to to support Transnet is a big omission. It's going to be a problem. Also, Transnet is the finance minister himself recognized last year that Transnet is the new Eskom. So we have massive problems there, debt redemptions that are coming up. And so the Treasury will probably have to be called upon to finance Transnet in the midterm, or to give guarantees and make a... It could be in open mouth operations and saying we're supporting a Transnet. So that's a big one. It also, I mean, that affects everyone in the economy, whether you're rich or you're poor. So it's a difficult stage we are in. We're not able to create a new, come up with new plans for economic growth and just to stimulate the economy. What we're doing is to pay for the neglect of Eskom over the years, the so-called state capture, but broadly, it's just the ANC's poor management of the economy. That's the debt that we're paying for. There's nothing new under the sun.
Can I stay with you for a second, Sam? The one thing that's obvious is economic growth is a precondition for being able to deal with poverty, inequality, and unemployment. It's not sufficient. There's a debate amongst economic historians about the Thabo Mbeki years, whether growth inherently leads to greater employment is a separate question. But what we can say cautiously is that growth is necessary, even if it's not sufficient, to deal with all of the social and economic ills Nwabisa, Lebo, you and I agree are threats to our democracy. When you assess this bill or the budget against the KPI of increasing the chances of economic growth beyond 3%, how does it fare?
Look, we're not going to have it. I mean, by the predictions of the Treasury alone, and they're very optimistic generally, and also the Reserve Bank, we're not going to get much growth this year, next year, and the year after. So South Africa is not going to get 2% growth almost forever. We're not seeing it in the horizon at all, and that's very low. If you look at your countries like China's and the so-called Asian tigers, they've had to have numbers very high, close to the tens, to be able to make a dent to their poverty. So South Africa doesn't have that at all, and there isn't anything structural that has been done, and also possibly not doable because we don't have money out of the lack of growth, we don't get more tax than we already have. So we have the chicken and egg situation with our economy. As Nwabisa says, there isn't, even the ESCOM intervention, there is nothing structural about it. It's meant to pay debt. But ESCOM has got a new hole with the tariff, the NERSA tariff. And it's going to have the same problem as it had in the past. Mm. Nothing has changed about ESCOM that gives you the indication that it will manage its affairs better. You have a leadership crisis there. Above the leadership crisis at ESCOM, you have a political crisis inability to take tough decisions and to manage. So ESCOM gets some money this year, next year, and the year after. It sort of plays around. It's like monopoly money, you know. You're not even using your money. You can mess it up and a big daddy will still support you and pay you 70 million rands later. So ESCOM is going to be back where it was in a couple of years because politically nothing has changed. So we're moving around in this very difficult path, and it does look like for the next 10 years, we're still going to be fiddling around with this little thing and doing this balancing act to do a budget that looks credible. But nothing massive will change. As Lebu is calling out for something that helps the poor. The next thing with an election next year, we're going to have a very populist budget. We're going to have social grants going up quite a bit. We might even get the 350 extended, or we get a basic income grant. And the funding of that, we're not even seeing where the cuts could be made. Yeah. So we don't have a leadership that is prepared to say, okay, we need to avail 100 billion rands to go towards a particular infrastructure that is going to ignite growth. Then where we're going to get that 100 billion rands, we are going to cut here and there. We're not having, we don't have that ability to make those tough choices.
Yeah. Lebogang, I think Sam's response is sober and depressing. It's not fundamentally disagreeing with you, but it's adding to the woes and saying, as I understand him, not that I need to mansplain because I think he was crystal clear, but I want you to respond to the sentiment, and I think Nwabisa props it up as well, that the folks who experience hardship the worst are those who are living under conditions of extreme poverty, relative and absolutely so. In addition to that, the so-called professional classes, the middle classes, the five of us, also have it tough. And that fundamentally, we should probably move this conversation from maths into the realm of politics and activism and cross-class solidarity, because this government is working out for no one, whether it be the mythical Gogo Dlamini or whether it be Lebogang Ramaphosa with an Airbnb that she is hiring out in Cape Town.
You are correct, Eusebius. And I think for me, when Sam started talking, I think we will be wasting the moment and the opportunity if it becomes the middle class versus the poor.
Yes.
Where I come from, fundamentally, is the fact that I do know that tonight, even if I bought it with a credit card on my overdraft, where my bread is going to come from. I know of many, many families where that is not a reality. And as much as I agree with Sam, that makes me sad. Now, if you look at one thing that COVID taught us, is that within a week, so many people did not know what they are going to eat. And a country and a ruling party that calls itself developmental cannot come and stand and deliver a budget speech and not say anything for me that even if it's only talk, because that's what we are used to, that speaks to that reality. And it is for that reason, it's not in disagreement to Sam at all, sober, very clear. It's not out of that is who is getting angry. Because in fact, where my anger lies is exactly what Sam said. That next year, you are going to see grants being given, T-shirts being given, a whole lot of things being given to appease the poor. When in fact, you know that you've got no ideas. And the lack of honesty, the lack of even understanding the context in which a budget speech happens, The crux of the matter is that austerity measures, the corruption, the graft, affect the poor black women the most. They carry the brunt. When you are selling fat cook, and when you are selling ice cream, like the example the president gave at SONA, but this bloody government cannot put the lights on. And you listen to a budget speech, and it's not telling you when you are in Alex, when you are in Pitsibisuleja, when you can't even get solar, how you are going to get electricity, which is a bloody fundamental right that this very party promised you. What do you need to do? And I don't think we are angry now. I think the middle class right now, and maybe I'm using a big brush, because I do know that fundamentally the black middle class also carry the brunt of looking after family members. But we are talking about energy right now, many of us, because we are affected, particularly our white counterparts in the main. But what does it mean for somebody living in Alex, in Pitsibisulejang, in Manzeville, where I come from, in Ditsobotla, in other places? That is why I said maybe we will realize that we are in real trouble when the poor start eating the rich. Because even the monies that have been given to Eskom, you know, they are given in the context where, you know, Midupi, you know, we've just done a story at Oxfam South Africa on the health conditions of the people in Lephalale, the escalating costs of Midupi. And we are not even seeing the results of that. I'm sorry, Eusebius, there is no way I can be angry.
I think the anger is completely justified. I think the anger is justified.
Down in debt. As a black middle class, and I know that other people have said there's no black middle class. It's people with a lot of overdrafts. The point I'm making is the fact that I know what am I gonna eat today, even if I bought it on account from Woolworths. How are you answering people who tonight do not know, because their livelihood was cut off by the electricity thingy? You know, it doesn't give, and I've never been, you know, it doesn't give like a measured answer of, so what is the solution? All I know is right now we are in the doing.
Well, I think that's fine. I mean, I think I've always, as an analyst, found it annoying when people think you need a back, you need an answer in your back pocket before your compelling description of the status quo should be taken seriously. Your description of the reality under which people live is true, and that truth doesn't change just because you don't have a magic wand. I want to spend the last 5 minutes, because I think we've made some good dialogical progress. There's more we can do, but for one bite, I think this is a good podcast discussion. But before we get to one final theme, Nwabisa, I just want to ask you one small little technical question. The minister, unsurprisingly, said the following in his budget speech yesterday. This is not an austerity budget. It is a budget that makes tough trade-offs in the interest of the country's short and long-term prosperity. When I read that, I immediately thought about Lebo coming onto this platform and this conversation with us. Now, how long is a piece of string? Verbal disagreements, they're less important than getting to the nub of the issue. But for what it's worth, as an editor of a newspaper that fundamentally looks after the very people that Lebo has centered in this conversation, was yesterday austerity, or is the minister accurate in saying, don't accuse me of giving you an austere budget?
I don't think it was austerity. And I think, of course, he's quite mindful of saying that because, you know, COSATU and the like are very much about, you know, will not give us an austerity budget. But I think, of course, he had a bit of room, you know, to do what he did. And thanks to the tax man, you know, and the rest of us, I suppose, you know, in this conversation and elsewhere. So no, it wasn't. But I mean, at the risk of hopping on about this, Yes, it wasn't, but it does not solve fundamental problems, you know, which really give rise to all of the descriptions that, you know, Lebo so excellently put. Mm. So it's one thing to say, to tick a box and say, no, well, this is not an austerity budget and, you know, we're trying to invest here and there.
But
there are no fundamental, structural issues that are really being tackled here.
So the last question, I want to start with you and everyone else, Lebo first, and then Sam. You can have 1 or 2 minutes each to either respond to what Mabisa says or make your final comments, whichever you choose for how you want to use your last 2 minutes. But I want to start with you, Mabisa, because you have centered this question of what are structural interventions? And yesterday is about really plucking the holes. It's not about structurally changing the economy. And it made me think of a really useful column that I read this morning on news24.com by excellent economist Miriam Altman. And she asks the question, is Horengwana's 2023 budget credible? And then she gives 6 ways in which to tell. But the conceptual gist, Mabisa, of what Miriam says is quite simple, that the most important determinants of whether or not we move from the status quo to a economy in which millions of people flourish has got nothing to do with treasury ultimately. It's got to do with the state broadly and the government in particular. For example, how do the public sector wage negotiations play out? What kind of accountability do you have over municipalities that overrun? What do you do about corruption? What do you do about a lack of financial skill and acumen among many municipal managers, for example? And it made me realize that as important as the budget is as an event in and of itself, I suppose the fundamental point that Miriam was making is that it comes back to what you are alluding to with this notion of structural changes, that economics and state-run institutions, private sector as well, and how these companies operate, the actual practical detail is, in a sense, far more important than simply looking at a mathematical model or three.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was actually thinking, you know, before I came on here that, look, we're going to talk about the budget, and it's really, and yes, we should, and it's important. It's a, you know, it's an important kind of intervention, and, you know, in this entire conversation, but also just as far as, you know, the functioning of our country. Mm. But we really got to look at the whole set of, for example, the speeches that we've heard. You know, the whole set of what it is on, that is on offer, starting from, you know, the State of the Nation address. And I know, you know, we may have, you know, conversations about, well, you know, what it's meant to do. But I think really the way we are pitching it, or where the government is pitching it, is far, far lower than we ought to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just one thing, the big questions of accountability that I put here. The lady who does my nails, Eusebio, said to me the other day, and we're talking about, you know, crime. And she says to me, you know, with the amount of tax that I pay, the idea that I know that even if something were to happen to me, the chances of somebody actually getting caught and being accountable for that are minimal to zero.
Yeah.
And she was really talking about, you know, kind of what life is in South Africa, and the whole thing of the fact that, you know, where we are pitching, where we are saying the functionality, the very functionality of a government at the most basic level, you know, you find that it's almost not there. It's almost like yes, there are platitudes. Yes, there are, you know, okay, we're trying to put this measure here. We're trying to put this plaster here over this wound. But as far as just fundamental issues that actually need to be tackled and building new cultures of governance, of accountability, those things are simply, you know, not there, at least not at a level that we ought to. So I must actually go and read the column you speak of. Mm-hmm. But just in broad strokes, I would absolutely agree with that. Yeah.
Thanks, Mabisa. That was excellent. Lebohang, your final thoughts?
Yes, the budget was delivered within a context of maladministration, of corrupt, and no new ideas. And I agree absolutely that it follows on a sauna that did not inspire any confidence. It also follows on the cases like that we had right now against the Guptas, where the state is seen to have been very weak in investigating one of the, I think, test cases around how are we dealing with corruption. But at the end of the day, and fundamentally, I want to know, how do politicians sleep, go around with blue lights and everything, when they know that the majority of South Africans, whom they have promised a better life, are going to bed hungry. And I think right now, especially as we lead to 2024, the reality and the truth we have is that the lights are on, but nobody is home. We are indeed on our own. And I do want to say, I think until the poor eat the rich, I have no sign that we've got a government that has the inclination, the know-how, the appetite, and anything to change this. We are going to crash and crash badly.
Just one correction, Lebogang. The candles are on and no one is home. I don't know about the lights.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the candles are on. Absolutely, Eusebio. That's a good one.
Sam, you've got the final say. So much that has gone on in this conversation that I think is productive, even if the realities being described are not necessarily bright.
Yeah, South Africa has a political problem first, and then the economic problems are really come out of the political problem. So the budget is a reflection of the political strategy at play. If we saw the SONA we had, and then the finance minister has to play around within that space. That's why
we are
done well in that. A context. He doesn't have a mandate outside of the mandate of his boss and his political party. So we talk about things that can be done and should be done, and the issue of local government. The national government is not a big brother to the local government sphere. I mean, local government is a sphere or on its own, and it's got a life of its own, and it's terrible continuing collapse everywhere you go. And so to solve these problems, it's going to require the public, and not in a dramatic way as a Lebo puts it, and I like a phrasing about the people who don't have eating, those who would do. But we still have an opportunity with the democracy and electing and demanding better representation, better leadership, so that we can achieve better things. But I still get the sense that the middle class is not feeling the pinch enough to be able to take the decisions that are required. And only up the road in Zimbabwe, people tolerated things and things were going south. And South Africa is a completely different country to Zimbabwe. We're not going to go south fast enough at the Zimbabwe rate. We've got institutions, especially the financial infrastructure, the markets, they delay us going down, and they sort of block some steps, and like having a Van Rooyen or two terrible political decisions. So we're going to have this difficult nightmare for probably a decade of going through the difficulties. Even if the political party were to change power next year, you're still going to have the problems, because the problems are very deep. They are in the political infrastructure. So we're going through a very, very difficult time. Sadly for growth, the absence of growth means that we're not going to be able to have the decisions that can be taken and should be taken cannot be taken. Absolutely. To ignite growth, further growth, create jobs, fight inequality. So it comes back to the issue of the credibility of the budget. I've been worried about this for the past couple of years, that the budget system is losing its shrine, and you start wondering. And another economist, Mamkete Lijane, Mamkete says, our decision makers are going as pay as you go. You take a decision now, we'll worry about it in 6 months.
Yep.
And then next year, you find the basic income grant. So just every time you get to a particular a stop along the way, and then you take a decision then. So the budget system loses its shine and credibility in such a situation.
Sam, thanks so much for coming on. I love how you always integrate across the different silos, because our political and economic lives are enmeshed. Nwabisa, thanks for your excellent leadership at the Sowetan. That continues to be one of the most important papers in the country, I must say, and I mean this, I mean, honestly, and I've said it on radio. When we used to prepare on the daily, when I did a daily show on radio, our starting point was always the Sowetan, even before the other papers in our stable, with apologies to my colleagues, because it is the People's Paper. And it's a paper that will center an economic story on the front page. The next day, it can be a rape, it can be GBV. It really asks itself, how are the people that Lebogang are concerned with affected by decisions in this country? And that's why it's such a fantastic paper. And then lastly, but not least, Lebogang.
Thank you.